Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you'll find in the middle of the page, the 7th wide line. The Mishnah deals with receiving change from the coffers of tax collectors. The thinking in the Mishnah is that the people that collected tax did so in unlawful ways, and hence the monies in their coffers are stolen funds. Therefore, it would be improper, be forbidden, for me to be entitled to offer money to them in exchange for change. Say you take a dollar and you exchange it for some dimes. So that would be problematic because the dimes in the tax collector's coffers are stolen. The Mishnah. Ein portin. Portin is, as Rashi says, lahachlif sloim befrutos. That's to exchange sloim, or larger coins, for prutos, smaller coins. We said to get change for your money from these tax collectors, because, as we said, they are under the suspicion of theft. So we say in the Mishnah, we don't take from the muhsin, velo mikis shel gaboyin, nor from the pouches of those that collect the meches, the tax, the ein neutlin mehem tzedakah, and we don't accept from them contributions to charity. Avol neutel hu mitoch beso o min hashuk. However, if you are going to him in his house and you want to accept a donation to charity from his personal funds, from that which is within his home, that is okay. We say those are that's his own money. Omin hashuk. Rashi says omin hashuk im yesh lo mois bashuk she'ein lokeach mitevas hameches. If he has money in the market, in a public area, that he's not withdrawing from the box in which he collects the tax funds, that's also okay. Before we go further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, which is a topic heading, / mivneh. Mivneh is a structural note. We've used a Roman numeral numbering system, 1 through 3, and they indicate Gimel Makoros, 3 sources, Shemashma, that imply Shemoiches Dinoi Kegazlon. The tax collector has the status of a thief. Uvimakuris number 2 and 3, and in sources 2 and 3 that will be cited in the Gemara, Mashma Damutu Laharim Olov. It is allowed to work underhanded or trickster fashion concerning dealing with him. And on this, the Gemara is going to ask, Vaha Dino Demachusa Dino. Do we not have a principle that government law is law, that if the government established a tax collecting system, one must pay those taxes? And if that's the din, how in the world can we even suggest the idea of ma'arim, of working around them, working in a conniving tricky fashion to circumvent the tax obligation? Now we turn to the Gemara. Tana. The Gemara opens up with a brisa that is in effect a continuation of what we saw in the Mishnah, that you're not supposed to take change from tax collectors. avol. However, if you, let us say, have a tax debt that he is going to collect, and you don't have the change. In other words, he is demanding of you, we'll say, half a sela. And all you have is a sela, or a dinar. A dinar is a denomination of currency. And you don't owe all of that. So you would give him that, avol noisein lo dinar. You would give the tax collector the dinar, the noisein lo es hashar, and he will give you the change. If your debt, just to repeat, if your debt is several prutos, which is less than a dinar, you can give him the dinar coin and receive, take change from him. Rashi uses the expression, why is that allowed? Because it's kematzil miyodo. It's like saving your own money, saving yourself from a loss. So even though there is there's a cloud of suspicion concerning the monies collected by the tax collector, but when it comes to your own personal welfare, of course you're not stealing, and there's only a matter of suspicion that the coins you might be receiving are stolen. In order to save yourself, you're allowed to do that, to give him the larger coin and receive change when you are paying that tax debt. Now, the Gemara asks, it quotes from the Mishnah the word umuchsin. And in the Mishnah we saw that we're not to take change from them, we're not to approach them with the need for changing our money. And why? Because we suspected them of being thieves. Ah, is that really so? Just because they're tax collectors, they fall under suspicion of thievery? V'homar Shmuel dino demachusa dino. Shmuel taught that the law of the land is the law, is the law in the eyes of our halacha. And if a person received the right from the government to collect taxes, Rashi speaks in the following terms: Dino de Malchus Dino. Rashi says, "Vezeh shekibel es hameches min hamelech, bedover kotzuv kach vekach l'shana, ein zeh gazlan." A person received a right to collect taxes from the king for a certain fixed fee that he would receive in doing so. So, where is there any where is there any basis of suspicion of his being a thief? He gained the right, he acquired the right to be a tax collector. Omar Rav Hanina Bar Kana, Omar Shmuel. Interestingly, Shmuel is presented as the first answer to the question raised from a principle that Shmuel himself authored. He says, "B'moiches she'ein loy kitzva." The reference in the Mishnah is to a moches that collects without any fixed amount, without any predetermined amount. Rashi says he takes whatever he wants. Oh, well, a guy like that that collects whatever he wants is not working within the framework of government authority. So therefore, we suspect him as being a thief. Debei Rabbi Yanai Amri, and from in the Yeshiva Rabbi Yanai, they have a second approach. B'moiches ha'oimed me'elov. We'll call him a self-appointed tax collector. He didn't gain the right from the king. Iko demasni lo aho. There are those that teach this discussion. We'll see. We'll feature Shmuel later on, and then the two answers that we had, Shmuel and Rabbi Yanai, will appear again as reactions to the following. This is a second version of the discussion. Lo yilbash odom kilayim. A person is not to wear kilayim garments. Kilayim are, we call them shatnez, garments made of wool and linen woven together. Afilu al gabi asora begodim. Even if the shatnez garment that you're wearing is on top of, say, 10 layers of kosher clothing, why would you wear so many layers of clothing? Lahavriach bo es hameches. Your intention is to, we'll say, cross border lines where they collect taxes, and apparently you're not charged for clothing that is on your back. So if you are, imagine you're a clothing salesman and you want to avoid paying tax on the merchandise, and you would wear layer upon layer of clothing, you wouldn't have to pay tax on that. And so the halacha is saying here that when it comes to the wearing of kilayim, so that's forbidden, even though you have no intention to benefit from the clothing per se as a source of warmth, which would clearly be a violation of the Torah's prohibition of wearing shatnez. You're not supposed to wear shatnez. And here we're saying, even if your intent is not one of clothing comfort benefit, but simply to avoid the taxes. So our Gemara goes on and says, Masnisin, the low Rebbe Akiva. This Tanaic source is not like Rebbe Akiva. Desanya, we have a Tanaic source that has two opinions. Also, Lahavriachas Ameches. The first opinion says you cannot evade the tax collectors. Reb Shimon Oimer Mishum Rabbi Akiva Mutur Lahavriach Es Hameches. And Rabbi Akiva, as quoted by Rabbi Shimon, says that one is allowed to evade the tax collectors. Bishlamo Leinyan Kilayim. I can understand regarding Kilayim Behol Komifligi. The two opinions that we just saw regarding the prohibition or lack thereof of evading the tax authorities with regard to the wearing of kilayim, I could see the machlokis is as follows. Demor Sovar, Rabbi Kiva, who says one is allowed, holds Dover Shein Miskaving Mutter. If you are doing something that on the face looks prohibited, but you don't have the intention to violate, you don't have the intention to violate the prohibition, so your action is mutter, is acceptable. You don't have intention to benefit from the clothing as clothing per se, you're just wearing it in order to evade the tax payment. Therefore, you're not in violation of wearing shatnez. Hence, Rabbi Kiva rules it's mutter. And more so about the Tanakama, the first opinion, even though you don't have intention to violate the prohibition, but to violate the prohibition meaning you don't have intention of wearing the shatnez for clothing purposes, for deriving personal benefit or warmth from the clothing, you're wearing it only to evade the taxes. Nevertheless, a dover shein miskaven is prohibited. It's prohibited to go through the motions of a sin violation, even though you don't have that intention. So as far as the machlokis between the Tanakama and Rabbi Kiva surrounding the issue of wearing the kilayim, we can make sense of that machlokis. Elo lahavriach boyas hameches mishori. But as far as an action whereby you are attempting to evade the tax authority, since when is that allowed? Omar Shmuel, does Shmuel not rule dino de mahusa dino, that the law of the land is the law? We should point out that in the source that we read three lines above, beginning with the words osu lavriachas ameches, the hagois rav Ranchburg, or Bitzal Ranchburg, points out that in other versions, it states explicitly that the prohibition of the Tanakama is with regard to the wearing of kilayim, and Rabbi Kiva's heter is with regard to the wearing of kilayim. In our text, in our version, we didn't see that explicitly, but as you can see, the Gemara is assuming that to be the case, even with regard to our text that's not so explicit. Nevertheless, the question comes up regarding the possibility of someone holding that it's allowed, that one is allowed to evade paying the taxes. How could that be? Is there not Shmuel's ruling that dino de mahusa dino? And you can see, with our markings, this is the second time the Gemara is raising the very same question, the second version of the Gemara. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Hanina, Bar Kana, Mar Shmuel, the same answers we saw before. The first answer, B'moiches Shein Lo Kitzva. And the second answer, the Bei Rabbi Yana Amri, B'moiches Ha'oimed Me'elov, as we explained before. V'iko Demasni Lo Aha. And a third version. You can see another two lines, which is the same marking introducing the question from Shmuel's din. What's the source? It says as follows: Noidrin laharogin ulaharomin ulamuchsin. A person can find himself under duress, in a threatened state by a person coming to threaten murder, or haromin, type of theft, or muhsin, tax collectors. And I'm sure you guessed it, with regard to tax collectors, our attention will be drawn shortly. But as far as the source is concerned, if one finds himself threatened and they want to take away your possessions, your, let's say in this case, your fruits, your vegetables, you can swear, you can take a vow. Nodrin is to take a vow to save your merchandise, save your produce, by saying, you know, this produce is truma, shehi shel truma. Ironically, you have people that as far as human relations are concerned, nothing is beneath their dignity. They'll even murder, steal, and plunder. But when it comes to kashrus, when it comes to laws of that which is allowed to, one is allowed to consume and not allowed to consume, it seems that they take that aspect of Judaism seriously. And hence, you will be able to fend them off by vowing that this produce is truma, and they're not going to want to take that. Or by saying, shehi shel beis melech. You know, the produce here belongs to the king. If you're gonna take it from me, you'll be in a lot of trouble. Afa bi shein ashel truma, afa bi shein ashel melech. All of this is, of course, a lie. But he's allowed to vow thusly, even though it's not truma, even though it's not the possessions of the king. As far as our discussion is concerned, we want to focus on the permission here to make this vow to save yourself from the muhsin, from the tax collectors. But why should that be allowed? Ula muhsin, v'omar Shmuel dino de machuzo dino. The law of the land is the law, and this man has a right to collect from you whatever taxes you owe. So if he's collecting in the form of produce, you have to pay him the produce. Why should you be allowed to fend him off by the false claims that it's true or it belongs to the king? Amar Rav Hanina Bar Kana, you know why? Because in this case, this tax collector isn't a standard government authorized tax collector. Amar Shmuel b'moiches shein lo kitzva, or Debei Rav Yanai Amri b'moiches ha'imei me'elov. And now we have a third answer which we didn't see before. Rav Ashi Amar b'moiches kenani. Rashi says, second line from the bottom, B'moicheshu knani anos v'ein lochush im goizloi hecho delekuchilu Hashem she'ein mevin shezeh mechazev. Here you're talking, according to Ravashi, we're talking about a Canaanite tax collector who Rashi adds the word anos, who will take things, threaten you in a forceful fashion, and he's a Canaanite tax collector, and as such, one is allowed to evade, provided you will not be discovered as doing such. So if you can get away with it, then it's okay. The topic that this leads us into is featured under our topic heading on the side, Gezel Kenani, the issue of stealing from a Canaanite. I in presenting the Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, don't want to, we'll say, get into matters that are, we'll say, highly controversial and require extensive analysis with regard to applied halacha. So I'm going to attempt to translate the term Kenani, and if we make reference to an Oved Avodah Zorah in a literal fashion. But for those who are interested in delving into this topic, then in terms of applied halacha, by all means, one has to do so by researching additional authorities on the topic. So as we go on in the Gemara, the issue that Ravashi just raised with his answer, that we're talking about a Canaanite tax collector, and hence we're not concerned about your attempting to evade the tax payment, Desanya, we have the following source. Yisrael uknani anos shebo ledin. A legal dispute arises between a Jew and a Canaanite, and they come to court. Im atoyochol lezakehu bedina Yisrael zakehu. If you can see rule a verdict of innocence for the Jew through Jewish law, then do so. Ve'emorlo, and tell the Canaanite, kach dinenu. This is our legal system. You might have a situation where, according to the Jewish legal system, you cannot exonerate the Jew in this dispute with the Canaanite, but through the Canaanite legal system, you can actually exempt the Jew. Bedine Knanim Zakeu. If by citing Canaanite rulings, you can exempt the Jew, find him innocent, then do so. Then Morlo, and tell the Canaanite, Kach Dinchem. This is the outcome of your legal system. V'im Lav, and if you can't exempt the Jew through, we'll say, straightforward legal citation, Boyin Olov Ba'akifin, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rashi says at the bottom line, Boyin Olov Ba'akifin B'chochma, through, we'll say, Chochma literally is through wise methods. Ad Shepotrin Esa Yisrael. B'chochma might mean through some kind of, I don't know if we should use the word, a tricky fashion, underhanded fashion, but certainly a non-straightforward fashion, then do so. A word I was really looking for Akifin is through subterfuge. So Rabbi Shmuel says, if that's the only way to gain innocence for the Jew, then do so. Rabbi Kiva Oimer Ein Boyin Olov Ba'akifin Mipnei Kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Kiva says one is not allowed to use subterfuge because you must always sanctify the name of God. And if by using subterfuge, it's going to be revealed that by letter of the law, the Canaanite is really innocent and the Jew is guilty, that's going to result in a desecration of God's name. The Rabbi Akiva. In viewing Rabbi Akiva, Taimodika Kiddush Hashem, the only hesitation that Rabbi Akiva has is the issue of the sanctification of God's name, Ha Leko Kiddush Hashem. If we were dealing with a situation where that would not be an issue, in other words, with 100% certainty, through subterfuge, you would be able to exempt the Jew, even though by letter of the law he's guilty, and you will not be discovered, then boin. Then we would do so. We would use boin means we'd come to the case with akifin with use of subterfuge. Yeah, but ugezel kanani mishari is stealing from a Canaanite something that's allowed. If you are suggesting, not only Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Kiva as well, are suggesting that the Jew is really guilty, but we're going to exempt him through whatever method we can, assuming there's no Chilul Hashem, and you're going to entitle the Jew to money that really belongs to the Canaanite. Is it allowed? Is one allowed to steal from a Canaanite? V'hatanya. And note that we have a long question that takes us to the second line from the top of Omid Beis. We have a Tanaic source that says, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Dover Ze Dorash Rabbi Akiva, and I highlight Rabbi Akiva's name because he's part of this this wonderment. Rabbi Akiva, a moment before, was suggesting that Gezel Kanani would be allowed, but look what he says. Thusly, Rabbi Akiva with Dorash, he taught, Kishaba Mizvirin, when he came from a place called Zephirin, Minayin Legezel Kananini Shuasar, from where do we know that stealing from a Canaanite is prohibited? Talmud Lomar, and we cite a pasuk that deals with the topic of a Jew who sold himself as a slave to a Canaanite. The Torah makes provisions for a person who sold himself into servitude to buy his way out. That's a result of making a calculation of how much each year of work he is worth, or each work year is worth, and accordingly money would be paid per year that remains till the end of his period of servitude, and through that he can redeem himself. The Torah speaks about relatives also participating in the redemption if need be. There's a pasuk on the side of the Gemara that we've written in that we should read before we continue in the Gemara. It says, V'chisasig yad ger v'toyshav imoch umoch ochicho imoy v'nimkar leger toyshav imoch o le'ekir mishpachas ger achrei nimkar geula tiyalo echod me'echov yigolenu. Pasuk describes a Jew that fell on hard times, and in order to survive, he had to sell himself into servitude, and he sold himself to a heathen. After the sale, he could be redeemed by one of his relatives. Now, we turn back to our Gemara. Rabbi Akiva is citing as a source for Gezel Kanani, theft from a Canaanite is being prohibited, the following Talmud Lomar, Achrei Nimkar Geula Tia Lo, after he was sold, from, we saw this in Pasuk Mem Ches, he shall be redeemed. And Rabbi Kiva learns from this, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Shelo Imoshenu V'yetze. Rashi says at the top, Shelo Imoshenu V'yetze, Klomar, Shelo Yotziuhu Beisdin Miyad Akusi Elabgula. The court is not allowed to disengage the Jew from his servitude without payment. Yochol Yigloim Olav. This expression, Yigloim, is explained differently by Tosfos than that which Rashi explains. I would prefer for this shiur to use the explanation found in the Tosfos that you can see, the second Tosfos on the page, in the middle of the Tosfos, V'nira L'ri, D'hochi Pirusho. The explanation of this is, Yochol Yigla Malov Shiyate Esaknani, V'yite L'pochos Mimashe Nosan Lo. So the Brisa is asking, would it be allowed to trick the Canaanite in offering him less money than he deserves to receive in order to redeem this Jewish servant? So we continue in our Gemara, Talmud Lomar, V'chishav im konehu, from which we learn, Yedaktik im konehu. No, the one who, konehu is the one who purchased the Jewish servant. Yedaktik means you must be precise. You give him what is due to him. So at this point, we've come to the end of our question. How in the world can you even suggest this idea of Since he's a, we said, Rav Ashi said before that if you had a Canaanite tax collector, so someone like that, you would be entitled to use subterfuge in avoiding giving him what he claims is owed to him. And we even saw a basis in Tanaic literature for Rav Ashi's response. We saw the case of we saw the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Kiva in effect agreed that if there's no issue of Chilul Hashem, then one is entitled to use subterfuge in order to save the Jew from paying a Canaanite. How can you say that in light of what we've just learned? And the focus is especially on Rabbi Akiva, who said that Gezel Kanani is forbidden. As you can see, a triangle marking appears. If you glance at the side, in the margin, under the Mivneh, we have a triangle featured, Tshuvos Liyashev Stira being in Gezel Kanani. These introduce answers to resolve the seeming contradiction within Rabbi Kiva regarding Gezel Kanani. Following each answer, double underline highlighting Abaye will appear. Abaye Makshe Al Hatshuvas, where Rabbi Abaye raises a question on the answers. So now the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef, Lo Kashya. Ha beknani, ha beger toshav. Rabbi Akiva's reference to one being allowed to steal from a Canaanite would be if you're dealing with an actual Canaanite. The source dealing with the careful financial scrutiny with regard to redeeming a Jewish slave sold to a non-Jew, that's a ger toshav. A ger toshav is a person who did not convert to Judaism, however he renounced idolatry. And he lives amongst the Jewish people in Israel. So with regard to someone like that, one has to be very careful and not take money that's not to take money unlawfully from him. Omar le Abaye. Abaye though asks, v'hotshravayu gabi hadodi ksivi. The two, Canaanites and ger toshav, are featured together in the Torah with regard to this topic of the Jewish servant. And when the Torah makes reference to whom, unto whom was he sold, this Jewish servant? So the Torah says, Lo lecha, the Jewish servant in question, whose redemption comes up, is a Jewish servant that wasn't necessarily sold to a Jew, Ela Lager. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Lager. V'lo Lager Tzedek, and not necessarily to a convert to Judaism, Ela Lager Toshav, but rather to the resident ger, the individual we described before, someone who merely renounced idolatry. Shenemar leger toshav. The pasuk says mishpachas ger ze ha'oved kechavim. That's a reference to someone who was an idol worshipper. Kshomer oy leker. When the pasuk continues describing unto whom was this Jewish servant sold, it says o leker ze hanimka l'avedas kechavim. That's a reference to someone who was sold. That's a Jew who was sold to serve as a custodian in an idolatrous temple. And in all of those cases, one is not entitled to use steal from them. If it comes to a question of redeeming a Jewish servant from them, even a case of someone sold to an idolatrous institution, one must pay them in full. So certainly theft from them is forbidden. How then can, and we reinstate our question, how then can Rabbi Akiva in the previous Tanaic source make reference to an allowance to steal from a Canaanite, provided that you don't come to violate the sanctified name of the Almighty. Elo omar rovo lo kashya, kan begzelo, kan bahafkos hava oso. A rovo says there's a distinction between outright theft from him, that's forbidden, but hafkos hava oso is, let's say, a cancellation of a debt that you owe to him. Rashi says, bahafkos hava oso, she'ein gezel mamish, if you owe money to so-and-so, and of course it's, let's make it clear that it's wrong not to pay your debts, but it's not the same level of severity as outright theft. So it's not gezel mamish, shori, kilekut chilul Hashem, that would be acceptable when there's no issue of violation defaming the name of the Almighty. And the issue of evading the tax collector would fall into that realm of hafkos halva, of cancellation of a debt. The Gemara, though, Abaye, though, asks, Amale Abaye, Eved Ivri, the case of the Jewish servant sold to the Canaanite, hafkos havosuhu, is that not a case of trying to cancel a debt? And we saw that that is forbidden. So how can you resolve the two sources by saying that the source indicating permissibility is with regard to hafkos havoso, when in fact the source that indicates prohibition is a case of hafkos havoso? The servant, the Jewish servant, has a debt of work, a debt of service owed to the one that purchased him. And and we saw there that you can't just walk out. You can't offer less money than is due in order to relieve him of the servitude. So how can Rava say that hafkos havoso is something allowed? Rava l'tame. Rava lenient with regard to that form of financial deprivation is consistent with what he says regarding Eved Ivri. The Omar Rava, Eved Ivri, the Jewish servant, is not a function of a simple debt of work, of servitude that's owed, but rather gufo kanui. The Canaanite that bought him not just for his work, but bought him as a human being. He gufo kanui means literally he owns his body. Oh, and therefore to have this Jewish individual who's functioning as a servant of a Canaanite exempted from continued service is in effect actual theft. You're stealing from the Canaanite an item, namely the Jew, that he owns. You're taking away from him something that he owns. That's outright theft. And that's why that is forbidden. We have a long point, and before we begin this long point, let's glance at the side to see what topics, what points will be made here. Number one, Gezel Akum. We'll continue with the topic of theft from a Canaanite idol worshiper. Number two, Avedas Akum, the issue of a lost article belonging to a Canaanite. Do I have an obligation of returning it to him, or may I keep it for myself? Number three, Tois Akum. Tois Akum is a case where he made a mistake in, say, calculating money. Do I have to reveal it to him? Do I have to return it to him? So we continue now in the Gemara. Concerning all of these, we'll say, financial issues concerning my dealings with Canaanite idol worshippers. Amar Rav Bevai Bar Gidl, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida, Gezel Kenani Oser, Avedoso Muteres. These 2 points will then be explained by the Gemara. You can see we squiggle underlined Gezelo Oser, and a few lines later, Avedoso Muteres. So we go over the points. Gezelo Oser, stealing from the Canaanite idol worshipper is forbidden. From where do we know that stealing from a Canaanite is prohibited? Shenemar, the pasuk says, that's the verse. Bizman shehein mesurin biyodecha, velo bizman sheinom mesurin biyodecha. When they are given into your hands, then you have one standard, but when they're not in your hands, then you cannot steal from them. Avedoso muteres, the Omar Rav Chamo Bar Gurya. Avedoso muteres means a lost article belonging to a Canaanite is muter for you to, upon finding it, to keep for yourself. As Rav Chamo Bar Gurya says in the name of Rav, Omar Rav, minayin la vedas haknani shimuteres, from where do we see in the verses that a Canaanite's lost article is something allowed for you to take, to keep for yourself? Shenemar l'chol avedas ochicha. This posuk is in the context of returning lost articles. On the side of our Gemara, we've provided a relevant quote from Devarim Perek Chav Beis Posuk Gimel. It says, "V'chein tase l'chol avedas ochicha asher tovad mimenu mitzasa lo suchal l'salem." All lost articles from your brother, you shall return. Upon your finding it, you're not allowed to avoid that obligation. And in citing the pasuk, the Gemara cites Shenema l'chol avedas ochicha l'ochicha tomachsir. We emphasize the subject of the pasuk, your brother. Unto your brother, you are to return. V'yat tomachsir l'knaimi. You're not obligated to return to a Canaanite. The ochicha meaning a fellow Jew, you're obligated to return, not so to a Canaanite. V'yemo hani mili hecha delo osi liyodei delo mechayev laduri basra. Maybe this distinction is so when you haven't taken possession of lo osi lo, that hasn't come literally into your hands, and the Torah is relieving me of the obligation to seek out the lost article in order to return it to him. Avol hecha da'osi liyodei emol lehadra, but where you have taken possession of it, you picked it up, and you discover that it's an item belonging to a Canaanite, maybe then, once you picked it up, you're obligated to return it. Omar Ravino umetzasa da'asoy liyodei mashma. The word umetzasa appeared in the pasuk that we cited before, that we read on the side of the Gemara. And that word indicates something that has come into your possession already. And nevertheless, the pasuk says that the obligation of restoring it to its owner is when it's l'achicha, your fellow Jew, to the exclusion of a Canaanite. Tanya, Reb Pinchas ben Yoyo Oimer, b'mokom sheishchilu Hashem, afilu avedoso osur. If your keeping of the lost article belonging to the Canaanite will result in a desecration of God's name, it is forbidden for you to withhold the lost article belonging to that heathen idol worshipper. Omar Shmuel, Ta'uso Muteres. Toso means if he makes a mistake. If a Jew, let us say, had a debt to collect from the Canaanite, and the Canaanite paid more than he had to pay, you can keep that extra amount. In keeping the extra amount, now Rashi adds, in keeping that extra amount that he paid out to you, there is no chilul Hashem. There's no desecration of God's name in such a case. And I'm sure you can feel the difference. Keeping an item that belonged to a heathen Canaanite in the case of a lost article that Reb Pinchas Ben Yori made reference to, that could lead to Chilul Hashem. People might identify that article as belonging to the Canaanite. What are you, the Jew, doing with it? However, let's say something that's paid out by the Canaanite himself to the Jew, maybe paid out more than he had to, that wouldn't lead to the Jews withholding that extra amount, would not lead to a desecration of God's name. And we have diamonds that appear now, and on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note, we indicate Maisim. We have incidents involving Betois Akum, involving this area of mistake. Kiha Dishmuel Zovan Mikusi, a case involving Shmuel buying from a kusi, from a heathen. Lakno Didavo Bemor Deparzala Bedalidzuzi. Lakno is a type of vessel, a receptacle that Didavo made of gold. And the kusi, this heathen, in selling the golden vessel, thought he was selling him parzala. Rashi says nechoshes. Parzala, here he translates as copper. Gold, and copper has a color that could be confused with gold. So the kusi thought he was selling a copper receptacle for the price of 4 zuz. Let me just go over the phrase again. Lakno de'avo b'mor. B'mor means, in this case, b'cheskas, assuming it to be copper. And he sold it to Shmuel for 4 zuz. V'iv la'le chazuz. And in addition to that mistake, another mistake is the payment was 1 zuz less. Rashi says, v'iv la'le zuz, v'oitos acheres, Sheikev zuz midoma vit ehu becheshboin shelokach gimel b'mokin dalit. Apparently, when Shmuel was paying out the money, he had paid out 3 zuz instead of 4, and as he withheld a zuz. And my understanding is that in paying for it, when he counted out the money, he counted out 3 zuz, and the heathen seller said, "Oh, thank you very much for the payment," indicating that the heathen thought that he had received full payment. The heathen made a mistake in thinking thusly, and that was enough for Shmuel to take the item home, having acquired a very expensive receptacle, paying not only little for it, but even less than the heathen thought he would be receiving. As we explained, on the grounds that when paying out the money, paying out 3 of the 4 zuz, the heathen thought that he had received full payment. Rav Kahana Zovan Mikusi, Rav Kahana purchased from a heathen, Mea V'esrim Chavita B'mea, he purchased from him 120 barrels of for the price of 100. In other words, the heathen delivered to Rav Kahana, who was purchasing barrels, he delivered 120 barrels, thinking that he was delivering 100 barrels. And the Ivla Lechad Zuza, and the same problem arose, that Rav Kahana paid out 1 zuz less. Omar Lay. And he said, now here we're using a pronoun, and he said, there are 2 versions in Rashi, 2 opposite versions, either Rav Kahana said to the Kusi, or the Kusi said to Rav Kahana, said the following, Chozi, take note, or we say, look, the Aloch Kosamich, I'm relying on you. So that if we take the first shot, Rav Kahana said, listen, we're making this deal, I ordered 100 barrels, and it's for this and this price, and I'm relying on you to oversee that everything is done properly. So Rav Kahana, according to this approach, instilled the authority to make sure that everything was done properly on the Kusi himself. So after the deal was done, and Rav Kahana ended up with 20 extra barrels and ended up paying one zuz less than the kusi even anticipated, but it's okay. Ravina, Zovan, Dikla, Hu Vikusi, Litzalcha. Ravina bought a tree. Dikla is a palm tree. He bought it in partnership with a kusi. Litzalcha. Litzalcha for sawing it into logs. Omar le Lishame. And Ravina told his servant, his own right-hand man, Kedam va'aisi meikoro, go to where the tree is being sawed into logs, and bring to me the logs that come from the trunk of the tree, from the lower part of the tree where the tree is thicker. Dekusi minyona yoda, the heathen, he knows that the tree will be sawed into a particular number of logs. And all that the kusi really pays attention to is the number of logs. So that if you just imagine a tree, the length of a palm tree, sawed into, let's say, six sections. Three Ravina would take, and three the kusi would take. And they entered this deal in partnership. And Ravina says to his right-hand man, listen, get the three that is due to me from the lower part of the tree where the tree is thicker. As far as the fact is that Ravina, wood-wise, lumber-wise, is getting more than the kusi, that's not a problem of stealing, of theft, because in the mind of the kusi, he is concerned only with the number of logs and not with the additional dimensions that we just alluded to. So that the kusi will not feel, he won't, let's say, realize or feel that he was ripped off or got the short end of the deal, because as the Gemara says, the kusi pays attention only to the number and not the thickness dimension. Ravashi havekozu beurcha. Ravashi was walking on the road. Chaza shivsha degufna bepardesa. He saw branches from grapevines in a vineyard. The tali ba kitufi de envy. And there were grape clusters attached to these branches. Omale le shame. Ravashi told his shamish, his servant, zil chazi, go check out. E de kusininu aisi. If they belong to a heathen, then bring them to me. Id Yisrael ninu lo aisi li. If they're Jewish owned, then don't bring them to me. Shoma ukusi davi yosiver bepardesa. Lo and behold, there was a kusi sitting there in the pardes. I don't think you have to assume that the kusi here is the actual owner of those branches, but he was a kusi, a heathen nonetheless, and he heard this. Omar Le, the kusi said, the kusi, shari, what? Because if it belongs to a heathen, then it's okay to just take it? Omar Le, Suravashi said, no, kusi shokil domi. The kusi will take payment for it. Yisrael lo shokil domi. The Israel won't take payment from it. My impression is that Ravashi knew that if it was Jewish owned, he wouldn't be willing to sell it to begin with. The kusi, on the other hand, would be willing to sell it and therefore take the branches if they belong to a kusi, and I will pay him for it. No reference to any suggestion of taking something for nothing. No suggestion here of taking, of stealing something. The Tosfos points out, the second to last Tosfos, Hochi Kwamino Ida Kusi Ninu. Let's read the beginning of the Tosfos. Says Nira Luri Shekein Hoya Daito Mitchila. This was in fact Rav Ashi's intention at the outset, and it was to pay the money. Kamosha Heishiv La Kusi. V'lo kemo shahoyo ha-kusi sover. And not like the kusi thought that the rabbi was saying, if it's a kusi, then just go steal it. Din kain hoyo sover. Because if you were to think that Rav Ashi was saying to his servant that which the kusi thought, it would come out that Rav Ashi holds the gezel ha-kusi muter, that stealing from a kusi is allowed. Our entire sukya is going along the lines that stealing outright from a kusi is something forbidden. So therefore, Tosfos comments that when Rav Ashi answered the kusi, that the kusi would take money, this is what Rav Ashi's intention was at the very beginning. And it wasn't some kind of, let's say, trick answer that he gave just to push off the kusi from his wonderment. Before we go further, we have a new line of thinking, a new trend of thought, hence you see a slash mark. And on the side of the Gemara, we have under our Nosei Mivneh heading, a house shape, Memros Shel Rava. We will see a number of comments made by Rava. There are quite a few of them. Be'inyin Tashlumim Tziburim, regarding public payments, funds that are paid in a public setting, Dina de Mahusa, Misim, taxes, and we'll touch on Hilchus Edus, laws regarding serving as a witness. Now the Gemara, Gufa, Omar Shmuel, Dina de Mahusa, Dina. And we saw that on Omer Aleph. We had highlighted that with our markings, if you recall, using the volcano shape several times back on Amud Aleph. Shmuel said, Dino de Machusa Dino Omar Rava Teda. To illustrate this, says, you should know, the Katli Dikli, the government cuts down trees, the Gashri Gishri, and from the wood they make bridges. The Avrinon Alayu, and we walk on those bridges. That would indicate that the government has the authority to go to people's property, cut down trees as is needed for the public welfare under the rubric of Dina de Mahusa Dina. And the proof is that we walk over those. If that was not allowed, if we would not view government authority as such, how would we be allowed to use, stolen items? Omar le Abaye. Abaye questions Rava's proof. The Dilma Mishum de Ayish Luhu Minayu Marayu. Maybe the fact that we use them isn't a function of Dino de Malchusa Dina, but it's a function of the original owners having given up hope in ever getting their wood back. Omar Le, Rava responds, Ilo Dino de Malchusa Dina, if not for that ruling, Hechi Miyashi, who says that they would have ever given up hope? If we look in the Rashi, a few lines up from here, Hechim Yashi Klomar Mi Havi Yeush Ha Yeush Kedi Havi, would their giving up hope have been grounds for being allowed to use the bridges as Abaye suggested? The Ein Kan Shinu Rishus. In order for Yeush, the surrender of the owners in seeing their items returned, to be of any legal significance, you would have to combine their giving up hope with a change in domain from their possession into the possession of some other private source. But you don't have a change in domain here. De'en kan shinu rishus shebrishus harabim, being in the public domain doesn't constitute what we refer to as shinui rishus, a change of domain. Rashi adds another point, v'shinui maisa nami leka, as far as another form of change that might have been a means of acquisition would be that the original item's nature, physical appearance, physical identity has been altered. Not so over here. Why? The hashtanami, here too, even though we're speaking about originally trees and now they're sawed into logs for bridge making, nevertheless, gufa de dikla mikru, they still retain their original name, dikla. They're called palm logs, but they're still referred to as dikla by the original item that was taken from the owners. So that Rava's point is then, let's say, emphasized that the fact that we use the bridges must be a function of the government having the authority to take these trees and make them into bridges, and not, as Abaye suggested, that our use of them is a function of the owners simply giving up hope. That would not have been sufficient grounds for making it permissible for us to use it. The Gemara asks, "V'ha lo ko'avdi k'da'amar malka," in making these bridges, collecting the wood, the collection is not done in accordance with what the king authorized. Malka Omar, the king authorized Zilu v'katlu mikol bagi. The king authorized the bridge makers to cut trees from each bagi is a section of land. Rashi uses the term bika. Bika often is a term referring to a valley. So, if you will, you can say from each valley, a certain number of trees is to be collected. Now, these governmental agents that go and make the collection don't do that. The Inu, they, Azlu, go, Vikaklu, Mechag, Baga, they take all their wood from one valley. So how can Rava justify the use of the bridges on the grounds of Dina de Mahusadina when the entire process of wood collection is not done in accordance with the king's ruling? The Gemara answers, Shlucha de Malka Kemalka. People should realize that the king's agents are like the king himself. Velo Torach. Just like the king doesn't trouble himself to leave his palace to engage in collecting funds and items that are needed, the king's agents also view themselves as quasi-kings. They're not going to trouble themselves. They're not going to go to one valley after the other. And people should realize that at the outset. They're going to go to one valley. It's the problem is really the public's problem in allowing that to go when they should have taken preemptive measures. The Inu, the public, afsid anafshayu, they brought upon themselves their own loss. The Ibaya lahu, the inkut mikule bagi umishkal domi. We'll take a look at the note that we've written between the lines that reads Le'asif k'sofim mikol biko biko. The public should have arranged for a collection of money from each valley, for limsoisim lemalchus, and given the monies over to the government, enabling the government to make a purchase in a legitimate fashion, so that in our scenario, if the government received monies from each valley, would then take those monies and approach one valley for all of the wood. So the members of that one valley from which the wood is being collected aren't losing out. They're getting fair payment for what is being taken from them. Omar Rava, man de mishtakach bevei dori. We continue with the issue of tax collections. One who is found in a threshing floor, a place where grains were gathered and processed. Para monsa demalka. Literally, he pays the portion of the king for all of them. Who are we referring to when we speak of all of them? So we have a granary where there are several partners in the granary. And the tax collector comes along, collects from one of the members a certain amount of grain. It should be realized, should be recognized that even though one is paying out the grain, he's paying on behalf of all the others. And when he meets up with the others, they can't say, tough luck, you gave your grain, that's for yourself, and we get off scot-free. Not so. But rather, when he pays the king, he's paying, in effect, on behalf of all the others. And my understanding is, therefore, that if the others, in the meantime, have taken their portions of the grain home, they have to pay this particular partner his portion in that which he paid out for them. V'hani mili shutfa. What we just said is true with regard to partners. Aval arisa. However, if there is a sharecropper involved in this grain establishment, and the owners paid out grain as a tax payment to the king's authority, to the king's agents, that doesn't include, or the oris is not included in this, the sharecropper is not included. Arisuse hu dekor mapik. We take a look at Rashi. Arisuse mapik. Di ein lo chelek begufa shokaka. The oris, the sharecropper, doesn't have a holding in the land itself. The ein olav lefroya chelek al habayis, and therefore, it's not an obligation that a sharecropper has in the first place to contribute in the tax payments. The tax payments were a tax because you are a landholder. He, not being so, does not have any obligation in sharing those expenses. Rashi adds, "Uleinyan zvuni lo mazvinon mine de gezelhu ma shenotlu min haoretz." To purchase grains from that tax collector would be prohibited in the event that he collected taxes from the oris. That's money. Those are, let's say, grain payments, tax payments that he had no authority to take. Therefore, buying from the tax collector under circumstances like that would be tantamount to buying from him stolen goods. The Omar Rova, Bar Maso, a Bar Maso, Me'avit. Rashi, Bar Maso, Bar Maso, Me'avit, Rishus Biad Yisrael, Gabai Hamelech, Lemashkein Ben Ho'ir, Almas Ben Ir Chaveroi, the Dino de Malchus Dino. A Jewish tax agent has the right to demand a mashkon, to take collateral from a member of a city as collateral for payment due by another member of the city. That's within the realm of, as Rashi says, the Dino de Malchusa. So that if the tax authority says to a particular individual, you know, you paid your due, however, your neighbor owes taxes and he hasn't paid in the meantime, I want you to give us an item of collateral for him. Vihani mili. This is now qualified. When is this so? Debarla ara ukarga dahai shasa. Barla ara is a land tax, a land tax paid upon having consumed one's harvest. And the karga is a head tax for this particular year. Rashi explains these terms in the last narrow line, Vahani mili deburla, ara, mas karka, she'ochal peros. It's a land tax for land that produced fruits that you consumed. Karga is a kesef gogolas, deshosoda, this year's head tax. So for these kind of tax payments, Rava pointed out that the government has the authority to seek collateral from one town's citizen to cover the other one's obligation. Aval, shasa dechalif, but if it's a question of a tax collector demanding payment for last year's taxes, hayo v'fayis malka cholif, since the king has accepted whatever he had received up till the end of the previous year, that's it. What happened last year is finished. And regarding an attempt to collect a mashkon from someone to cover last year's taxes, that would be unlawful. Because, as we said, the king already has been satisfied with what he had received for last year. V'yoma Rava, Hani de Dairi Dori. Rashi explains, two lines from the bottom, the Dairi Dori, Akum, an idol worshipper, Shiesh Lahem Behemus, that has animals, Umizavlin Mehem Sodois Bishar. Animals, as in the course of nature, need to relieve themselves, and their manure is useful as fertilizer. People would hire these idol worshippers to bring their animals into their fields for fertilizing, for manure purposes. So regarding these groups of heathens, Rava says, Besochat Tchum, if they are within the Tchum. The Tchum is a term, it's a distance, referred to often as Tchum Shabbos. If they're within, we'll say, the vicinity of the town, Osir Likach Mehen, you cannot buy animals from them, from these heathen manure providers. My time, well, why can't you buy animals from them? Mishum Dema'arva Chiyusa Dema'asa Badaya, because there's very likely mixed amongst them animals, chiyuser animals, demasa of the city that belongs to Jews amongst them. Obviously, the suspicion that they have these heathens have these Jewish animals unlawfully amongst their animals. However, if you meet up with these heathen manure providers, chutz l'tchum, At a significant distance, Tum, in Shabbos terms, is 2,000 amas, approximately a kilometer away from town, then mutar likach mehem, then you can buy from them. We won't assume that if you find these manure providers at that distance from town, that the animals that they have mixed amongst them Jewish-owned animals. Omar Ravina, im hoyu bailim miradfim acharem, if you see the owners running after them, these heathen manure providers, hey, you know, you've got my animal, then afilu chutz l'tchum osur, then even at a distance from this town, it would be osur to buy from them. Machriz Rava vitema Ravuna, Rava announced, and some versions have Ravuna, the Salkin Le'ila Udenachtin Le'tata. This is an expression, without translating, it means, let it be known by everybody. Literally, the Salkinim are those that go up, and that they possibly those that rise, that go travel to Israel, Udenachtin Le'tata, and those that descend, that go down, let the following be known by all. Hai Bar Israel, the Yoda Sadusa Lekusi, a Jew that knows testimony that would benefit a heathen. The Ozav Asid Le Bedine Dekusi Al Yisrael Chavrei. And this Jew with the testimony goes to a heathen court and testifies testimony that will work against a fellow Jew. Mishamtinan Leh, we will excommunicate this Jew who testifies on behalf of the heathen, causing a loss to a fellow Jew. My taima, why does he deserve excommunication? What crime has he done? So the answer is, the inhu mafki mamona, the heathen court procedure is to mafki, literally to take away money. They will charge someone money. We continue at the top of the Kuf Yudalad, apuma dechad, literally on the mouth of one, meaning based on one witness. And what we have then is a situation where a Jew is going to end up losing money in favor of this heathen based on the testimony of a single witness. And that is contrary to Jewish law. In order for us to be able to charge someone money, to extract payment from someone, you have to have a minimum of two witnesses. And since the heathen court procedure so far, as we're seeing in the Gemara, is such that money will be extracted with the testimony of a single witness, you're causing an unlawful loss to the fellow Jew. Now, the lo amoran ela chad, avol betray lo. The prohibition is only if you are testifying alone. But if you are testifying along with someone else, then we don't have this objection. V'chad nami lo amoron, elo bedini demegista. That which we spoke about, that one is forbidden to offer testimony, that's only in a heathen court that is an informal, unofficial kind of court. Rashi describes the Megista, he has two pshatim. The first pshat on the top line, the Megista, maybe reminds you of the word magistrate, but that aside, Megista b'nei kfar she'ein yoivim lodu b'mishpat. Let's call them ignorant farm folk that don't know the ways of law. There's another pshat that Rashi gives on the fourth line from the top, but in the meantime, we're referring to this as offering testimony in an unofficial type of court setup of the heathens. Avol Bei Davor is a reference to a formal governmental court. In Hunami, they too, the heathen authorities, as well, Ahad, with the testimony of a single witness, Mumsa Shadu Le, they impose an oath upon the individual from whom money is being claimed, but they don't charge the individual. They don't extract, they don't do actual repossession or extraction of funds from them with the testimony of a single witness. So this idea of imposing an oath based on the testimony of one witness, in fact, is something that in Torah law we have the same. If you have, imagine a single witness saying, testifying, I saw Mr. X borrow money. And hence, he's testifying that Mr. X owes a debt. Mr. X would have to swear, if he maintains his innocence, he would have to swear, I never borrowed the money. That's an oath taken in the face of the testimony offered by a singular witness. And as we said, that is in line with Jewish practice as well. So that a single witness, a Jew, who knows testimony that might benefit a heathen, and it would cause its testimony to the detriment of a fellow Jew, the witness would be able to appear as a single witness in a heathen court, provided it's an official government court that functions similar to the way Torah law operates. Omar Ravashi, Kihavino Bei Ravuna, Ibai Alon. When I was learning by Rav Huna, other versions have Rav Kahana, the following question came up. We've used a long question marking here. Aleph, one side of the analysis, and then two lines later, O Dilma Beis, or maybe another way to approach this. What's the case? Adam Chashuv, the Samchi Ale Kevei Trei, a Jew who was a highly respectable, literally an important individual. He's so respectable in the eyes of the heathens that they rely on his word as if it's the testimony of two. Now let's make something very clear. In formal Jewish courts, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're a single witness, that's it. Your testimony cannot be responsible for extracting money from one of the litigants. However, amongst the heathen authorities, they placed such a premium on people of standing that they rely on them as if they are two. And as a result, mafki mamona pume, they will extract money based on his word, on his testimony. Velo iboyet le lasude, and as a result, maybe the odom choshev, the Jew of standing, should not testify. Again, testify in a heathen court, which will result in a fellow Jew having to pay out money. Dilmor possibly came unto odom choshev hu lo motzi mishtamet lehu motzi lasude. On the other hand, since he is such a significant, important individual, he has no way of avoiding offering the testimony, and since he would be under a form of duress, he can offer the testimony. Teku. So this remains unresolved. Omar Avashi, Hai Bar Yisrael Dezovin Le Aro Le Oved Kechovim Amatsra De Bar Yisrael Chavrei Mishamtina Le, a Jew who owns property, and there is a neighboring piece of property. Let's talk about fields. So a Jew owns a field, and there's a neighboring field also owned by a Jew. And we'll call Mr. One sells his field to an idol worshiper, causing the neighboring Jew now to have an idol worshiper on his border. Mishamtinonle, we excommunicate him. My taima, why will we excommunicate him? Inema mishum dina de bar matzra. If this is a result of the laws of border owners. Now, this is a topic that's elaborated upon in Maseches Bava Metzia quite extensively. Here, we're just making a superficial reference to it. But dina de bar metzra essentially means that if you're selling property, let's say all things being equal, the first claims on it, first rights to purchase are those that share a common border with the field being sold. So here we're describing a Jew who's selling a field to some outside idol worshiper, and not to the Jew that owns a field on sharing a common border with the field being sold. So this would represent, this would appear to be a violation of the rules of Bar Metzra. Metzra is a border. Bar Metzra means a person that shares a common border. However, v'homar mar, but it has been taught, Zovin me akum v'zovin le akum leko mishum dino da bar metzra. Purchases of land from an idol worshiper or sales of fields to idol worshippers do not fall within the realm of those laws that we call dina de bar metzra. We're not going to elaborate on this here. Just all we're saying is that this transaction, since an idol worshiper is involved, it's not governed by those laws that we describe dina de bar metzra. As far as why not That's discussed in Maseches Bava Metzia. So, for our purposes, this point made by Rav Ashi that the sale of the land to the idol worshipper constitutes grounds for excommunication, not because, though, of violation of the rules of Bar Mitzvah. Elo, rather, the problem here is the Amrinon lay, we tell the seller, Arba Isli Arya Amatsroi. Well, literally, you've laid down on my border a lion. The idea being that throughout history, idol worshippers caused great suffering to the Jewish people. In many, many communities, many, many pogroms, many attempts at mass murder and pillage and plunder. And hence the Jew that remains here now with a new neighbor, an idol worshipper on his border, is like having a lion lying next to you. And therefore, he claims, as we read in the Gemara, you've put a lion on my border. Therefore, someone who did conduct such a sale, sold his land that bordered on a fellow Jew's property to an idol worshipper, Meshamtin Olay, we excommunicate him, Ad Kobil Olay, Ko Unso De Osi Machmose, until the seller accepts upon himself the responsibility of compensating the neighbor for any loss that may result as an outcome of this idol worshipper neighbor being here. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.